You know, the way we look at it at Catholic Psych Institute is to say, well, we're not going to get a full answer about the human person from the sciences alone, because the sciences measure what's observable. In other words, the material world. And the human person, while part of us exists in the material world, we also have a pretty significant dimension of who we are as persons that is spiritual. It's non-material. You can't see a significant part of who we are. So you can't measure, you can't observe, you can't apply the scientific method to a significant amount of who we are as humans. So this is why the sciences, which are limited to that which is observable, can't possibly ever come up with an accurate model for what a human person really is. That's why we need a Catholic perspective to give us a full model, a real model of what a human person is.
Are you looking for a comfortable brown scapular that won't break? Check out our sponsor, Scapulars.com. They use American-made paracord, so it's super strong. And they also use Australian merino wool, so it's super comfortable. It feels like you're getting a warm hug from your heavenly mother. Click on the link above or below in the description and get yourself the most durable, comfortable scapulars in the world.
Ready to walk a path that transforms you, mind, body, and soul? Follow My Camino offers expertly planned Catholic pilgrimages along the sacred Camino de Santiago. Choose from legendary routes like the Camino Francés, the scenic Camino del Norte, the coastal Camino Portugués, or the ancient Camino Primitivo. Whether you have 2 weeks or a full month, we'll guide your journey with prayer, fellowship, and visits to holy sites like Lourdes and Fatima. Start your spiritual adventure at www.followmycamino.com, because every journey begins with a single faithful step.
Hello and welcome back to A Reason for Hope. My name is Mario Costabile and I'm your host today. We are joined with Catholic psychologist Dr. Greg Bataro. Before becoming a psychologist, he discerned a religious vocation as a Franciscan friar of the Renewal. He lived in the Bronx for 4 years, following in the footsteps of St. Francis of Assisi. Under the mentorship of Father Benedict Rochelle, this experience formed him in the spirituality of abandonment to divine providence, which he now integrates in his model of psychology. In 2012, Dr. Bataro returned to New York as a psychologist and founded the Catholic Psych Institute. He currently lives in Connecticut with his wife, Barbara, and 7 children. Dr. Bataro, how are you?
Thank you so much. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Really great here in New Jersey, and you're in Connecticut. Is that right?
Yep, not too far away.
Awesome. Awesome. I have a lot of questions for you today. I'm very excited to interview because there's a lot of things that I don't understand about the psychological space, psychology, etc. So my first question: statistics indicate that the mental health crisis today is getting progressively worse. It seems to have been exacerbated by factors like the pandemic and economic uncertainty. What is lacking in secular psychology today? And in your view, why is it not working?
Yeah, it's a huge, huge question. And I think I can give you a really simple answer. I use an analogy at least to get to the answer. And this is, it's a little bit shocking when you realize that there is no standard of mental health. And what I mean by that is, you know, I use this analogy. If your car breaks down, you know you need to take it to a mechanic. You're not going to fix all the problems of your own car. And so you need an expert, somebody you can trust. Well, you want to find a mechanic who knows how to fix your car because they know how a car is built. They have the blueprints, the schematics. And when you know how the thing is supposed to be built, you understand why it's broken. So you bring your car in and the wheel's flat or doesn't turn anymore. And a good mechanic looks at it and says, okay, this tire is not turning, but I know that a tire is supposed to turn. So we know there's a problem. And then hopefully they go a little deeper than that and they figure out, they know what's wrong. They know how to fix it. Well, the object of the mechanic's care is your car. Now, if you go into the medical sciences, you go into, let's say, cardiology, you have a heart doctor. Heart doctor is an expert on the heart. The object of care is the heart. And medical science, biology, physiology has come a long way to know what the heart is supposed to do. The blueprint of a heart, the schematics, the drawing of what a heart is. When a heart doesn't work correctly, it doesn't pump fast enough, it doesn't pump blood, it's got a blockage. We look at that and we say, okay, we're going to compare this to the standard of what a healthy heart is supposed to look like. Now we know why this one's not working, and then we can get to work to fix it. It actually is the case, as shocking as it is, that there is no standard of what a human person is in the secular field of mental health and psychology. So you feel like something's broken. You feel like something's off. You don't feel right. Your relationship's not going well. You've got turmoil in your family. And you think, okay, well, maybe you have the humility to realize I need some help. I'm going to go find an expert. You look it up on the internet. You get a referral from somebody you trust. It turns out that there are no secular schools of thought that say, here is the whole human person as it's meant to be. There actually is no standard. So this is what's missing. And we can go really deep into this if you want to, but we, you know, the way we look at it at Catholic Psych Institute is to say, well, we're not going to get a full answer about the human person from the sciences alone, because the sciences measure what's observable. In other words, the material world. And the human person, while part of us exists in the material world, we also have a pretty significant dimension of who we are as persons that is spiritual. It's non-material. You can't see a significant part of who we are. So you can't measure, you can't observe, you can't apply the scientific method to a significant amount of who we are as humans. So this is why the sciences, which are limited to that which is observable, can't possibly ever come up with an accurate model for what a human person really is. That's why we need a Catholic perspective to give us a full model, a real model of what a human person is. And we use the philosophy of the human person and the revealed truth, and or we could say the spirituality, or even the theology of the human person. And we mix that together. We integrate that with the psychological sciences. So the way we talk about it is we understand the person through the lens of faith, reason, and science. And that's how we've been able to come up with a full model, a standard of what is human. We know what the healthy version of us is supposed to look like, and therefore we can make judgments on what unhealth or lack of health is.
That's wonderful. It totally makes sense. And it affirms that most of the psychologists that are out there are not incorporating the spiritual component of the human DNA, right? I love the way you just explained it. So let's talk about your formation and how that developed within you. I mean, the fact that you were in formation with the Franciscan friars and you were mentored by, you know, Father Benedict Groeschel, a saint, you know. Tell me a little bit about, you know, your history, your background, your formation, and how that formed what you're doing today.
Yeah, I'd love to. You know, when I went to college, my parents had just gotten a divorce. It was kind of a rocky high school time for me. And finally, it all kind of broke apart when I went off to college. And I was really reeling. I was sort of seeking, figuring out what just happened in my life. Why am I so miserable? Why don't I feel like I know who I am? Some of that's normal for the age, but some of it was deeper because of this family structure. I grew up Italian Catholic. You know, family was everything, more even so than faith and religion. So when the divorce happened, it rocked my core. And I was wide open to sort of looking for who I am and what this life is all about. I went to Boston College first, and I had this amazing professor, Catholic philosopher, Peter Kreeft, who is actually speaking at our upcoming conference, our Summit of Integration. And he taught me how to think, how to integrate philosophy. He actually introduced me to John Paul II, he mentioned as a patron. He's our patron as well. And the work of John Paul II changed my life. I read a book he wrote called Love and Responsibility. And it was all about marriage and family life and love and relationships and sexuality and romance. And he made sense of why I felt like everything was upside down in my life. He gave an answer to what marriage is supposed to be, what love is meant for, all of these big picture questions. And I realized in that moment of my life that I want to spend the rest of my life helping people understand how important it is to pursue a life of happiness. We must pursue a life of holiness. That if we follow God's plan, it's not just about going to church on Sunday. It's actually about flourishing in our humanity. He knows how he made us and he loves us. So when he gives us the rules to follow or the things that are important for us to think about in our life, it's because he knows it's good for us. And if we learn those things and follow those things, we actually can be happy. So that was the beginning. I ended up, you know, I studied philosophy there. I ended up transferring to Franciscan University of Steubenville. I continued my philosophy, studied mental health, studied theology. And I actually then went to discern religious life. So like you mentioned, 4 years as a Franciscan in temporary vows. Father Benedict taught me the spiritual life, Franciscan spirituality especially. So I had my philosophy, I had my spirituality, and then I discerned that I was actually called to marriage. So I left the Franciscans before final vows, and I decided, well, now I have to make money, I have to earn a living. So it made sense to become a psychologist. So then I went off to study psychology, and I got my doctorate 4 years, 5 years later. And my wife started my practice, started our family, and the rest is history.
It's awesome. Great story. Great blend of many aspects of your life to do to prepare you for what you're doing today. Father Benedict Groeschel informed you in the spirituality of abandonment to divine providence. Share what that is with our viewers and listeners.
Yeah. So there's a couple of books out there that people are familiar with. Maybe, some spiritual writings by Father Jacques Philippe. And also the book actually called Abandonment to Divine Providence by Jean-Pierre de Caussade. And it's all about knowing that we are loved by a father and knowing that we have nothing to actually worry about. You know, Jesus says in Matthew 6:25, do not be anxious about the things of your life. And, you know, I sometimes joke about how, you know, it seems so crazy when Jesus said, eat my flesh. You know, all these disciples left after he said that. Like, that's pretty crazy. Eat my flesh. What are you talking about? I don't think we even take him seriously when he says, don't be anxious about your life. It's almost like that's too crazy. We believe that we can eat flesh, but not being anxious is almost too far afield. But he actually commands us, do not be anxious. How could he possibly expect us to not be anxious about the things, your bills, your taxes are due, you might lose your job, your kids are away from the faith. You know, it's like, you know, you don't like the preaching at church. Somebody's cutting you off in the parking lot on the way out. You know, all these things that we're getting upset and anxious all the time. Well, he gives us the reason and he explains it to us. He says, look at the flowers in the field. They don't work and stress about their life, but there's nothing more beautiful than they are. Look at the birds in the air. You know, they're not stressed out and anxious, but they're fed. They're taken care of. We are taken care of. So if we can trust the Father who loves us and takes care of us, that's what divine providence means. He provides for us. Then we actually literally have nothing to be worried about and we can have no anxiety. And we're seeking peace. We don't want to be ruminating. We don't want to be losing peace, sleep. You know, so this is the key. And what I do in my work is integrate the psychological principles. What does it actually look like in the way your mind works when we're talking about these big lofty spiritual ideas?
Can you give me an example? How would you incorporate faith into, you know, helping someone psychologically? Do you share these Catholic principles? Do you share the spiritual component, God's will in our life, et cetera, et cetera? Do you share that in tandem with one another? How does that look like?
Yeah, sometimes it depends on the client, you know, who we're working with. And some people are well-educated, more, you know, more experienced in the faith. But I think in general, we allow our Catholic formation in faith to inform us about who a person is. Like I said, it's like the car mechanic. Being Catholic means we know who you are, how you're made, how you're supposed to be functioning, and what's wrong if you're not going according to those, you know, those norms. You know, so, you know, some people bring their car to the mechanic and they know a little something about the car. So maybe you will get into a conversation with the mechanic about the kind of oil that you're using or the brand of brake pads that you want to put on. Or some people don't have any idea what any of that's about, but it's okay. It actually has nothing to do with whether or not the car mechanic knows what they're doing. So that's how we look at it. If we know how God made you, you don't even have to be Catholic to come see us and work with us. We work with anybody. It doesn't matter what you believe or your faith, because what we know that we're informed by our faith about actually pertains to every single human person as long as they're human. And that's the model that we're using.
The Brown Scapular is a special Catholic devotional. Invest in a scapular that is as strong as your devotion. At scapulars.com, they use super strong American-made paracord because your scapular should be as strong as your devotion. They also use the finest Australian merino wool that feels like a warm hug from your heavenly mother. You'll also find handmade rosaries with our distinctive deliverance cross, Italian-made saint medals, keychains, and jewelry. Visit the link above or below in the description to get yourself one of the most durable, comfortable scapulars in the world.
Ready to walk a path that transforms you, mind, body, and soul? Follow My Camino offers expertly planned Catholic pilgrimages along the sacred Camino de Santiago. Choose from legendary routes like the Camino Francés, the scenic Camino del Norte, the coastal Camino Portugués, or the ancient Camino Primitivo. Whether you have 2 weeks or a full month, we'll guide your journey with prayer, fellowship, and visits to holy sites like Lourdes and Fatima. Start your spiritual adventure at www.followmycamino.com, because every journey begins with a single faithful step.
Tell us a little about your mentorship program. I know that is something that the Catholic Site Institute implemented somewhere around the pandemic.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right before the pandemic, sort of came up with this idea of how to expand the way that we work with people from a mental health services kind of perspective. And so, you know, I realized that I kind of put a lot of things together at around the same time in my life. You know, it's kind of 7 years into my practice, I had that 7 year itch. And I was wondering if this is really what I was made for. I had some frustrations happening in my practice. And I realized I don't feel like I'm doing what I could be doing for people. And I, you know, long story short, realized that in order to really walk with people and help people, I wanted to do what Jesus did for us, which is to really go into people's lives, meet them where they are, not sort of sit back in my office and have a scheduled appointment and you show up when it's convenient for me. But instead, I wanted to actually be a part of somebody's daily life, be available to have dialogue in the midst of the things they're actually going through. And then, you know, we're open to technology and creativity of the human ingenuity. And so using an app and a kind of digital dialogue with voice messages back and forth, we created a methodology in which we can actually carry on a very human, very personal, very deep conversation in dialogue over time, back and forth every day. And so when you're working with one of our mentors, you actually have somebody who is trained in the psychological sciences, but is entering into your world where you are, available to you on a daily basis. So you don't have to compartmentalize and then wait for a session next week. It's like if you had that fight with your wife, if you had your kid come home and complain about the XYZ, if you're losing sleep, if you're anxious, if you're depressed, whatever's going on at work, we're going to talk about it today. You can actually leave a message from where you are, actually talking about how you're feeling in the moment when you're feeling it. And then you're getting responses back and forth. So this is our model. It's called, the fancy technical term for it is integrated, because we bring the faith into it, daily, because it's every day, dialogic, meaning it's back and forth dialogue, mentorship, IDDM, we call it mentorship for short, But that's the model that we developed out of a real deep understanding of how we're made in God's image in this Catholic worldview.
So is it kind of like a hotline, like a mental, you're having difficulty, kind of, you get anybody or do you get someone that is connected to your history?
Yeah. It's established. It's established relationship. So you sign up, you get assigned a mentor, and then you get a private channel essentially through this app that we use. And then you have this, it's a private one way or it's two way, but you're the only two people in that channel in that conversation. So it's a dialogue back and forth. All the messages are recorded, which is really interesting because that means that you can always go back to anything that was helpful to you from your mentor in the past. And you're also getting that immediate, you know, within 24 hour response. And that's how the dialogue is actually happening in an integrated daily way.
And you started this 4 years ago, 5 years ago?
Yeah, I personally came up with the idea and did it experimentally for a year starting in 2019. And so that carried me right through into COVID. It was working so well, so quickly that I knew I had to teach other people how to do this and introduce the rest of my team. And so the rest of Catholic Psych Institute was doing normal traditional psychotherapy. But I shared with them what I was doing with this model, and they all started using it as well, and they loved it. And so eventually we transitioned away from the traditional psychotherapy model into this new mentorship model.
It must be growing. It must be really accelerating, because I think it's a win. I mean, people suffer and they're in the moment. They want to talk to someone. Am I correct about that?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's always a little tough being innovative and disruptive and sort of breaking out of the old model into something new. So certainly, I'm learning a lot about how to do things like that. It's not how I was trained, people have the data kind of speaks for itself. The fruit speaks for itself. And so, you know, we've got over 1,200 outcome surveys, people talking about how much this has changed their life. We serve over 300 people a month. We have a team of over 30 people now, mentors who have been trained in our model, who are providing this now in their own way. So yeah, we're growing very quickly.
The relationship between sin and psychological health is complex, but Catholic teaching suggests that sin can negatively impact one's psychological well-being. What is your feeling on that when people are struggling, and they're, there's the idea of a spiritual, you know, attacks, and how do you incorporate the two? How do you decipher between the two? Thoughts on that area?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, this is our model of integration. What we mean by that is that we don't compartmentalize or separate our emotional health and mental health from our spiritual health. These are convenient lenses to look through, convenient categories to study. You know, if you're going to become an expert in theology, okay, then you go get a degree in moral theology, then you're going to really focus in on sin. But it doesn't mean that the person is somehow separated out into these parts. So whatever we're talking about, it's going to affect all the other parts. You know, another related question that people ask is like, what's the difference between spiritual direction and therapy? Or what's the difference between demonic influence and a psychological disorder? Well, my answer to all these questions is there's much less different than you might think. And so, you know, when we sin, we have this orientation, a gravitation away from what's actually good for us. That's called concupiscence. And when we follow that orientation, it's like if you're made to go north, but your compass is broken and it's pointing you in the wrong direction, and you're only following that compass, in other words, you're only following your orientation towards sin, then you're going to not end up at north. And in the same way, when we follow our disordered desires and our disordered thoughts, we're not going to end up at happiness. We're not going to end up at flourishing. And really all these things come together, spiritual flourishing, mental flourishing, psychological flourishing. It's human flourishing. And so this is what we need to look at is, okay, how does sin affect me? Well, okay, so you have a proclivity towards or an orientation to that taking the easy road, the comfortable way, avoiding discipline, avoiding the hard path. Well, sometimes the right thing, the good thing, and the beautiful thing is the harder path. In fact, kind of usually mostly, it's usually most of the time it is actually the harder path. But if we follow our inclinations towards the easier path, we're not going to end up at doing the good, the true, or the right, you know, the beautiful thing. And so that's how we want to start to dig a little deeper. Like, how do we know the good, the true, and the beautiful? Well, it's not going to just be from our initial desires. It's maybe going to be towards a modification and maybe a deepening of understanding what we're really looking for. Not the easy way out, but the beautiful thing in the end. So that's how we can talk about some of this overlapping in the same conversation.
Can you define the difference between spiritual direction, as you said, the kind of overlap versus your work and what you do, psychology?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a matter of expertise in terms of the provider. That's really what matters in that question. Ultimately, and this is what we're seeking to develop and provide, is having an expertise that overlaps both. You know, at the end of the day, you should have a priest who's giving spiritual direction, who is familiar with and can speak, you know, professionally and from an expert perspective on things of the emotional life. The best case scenario is that you go to a therapist who certainly has the training and expertise in the psychological life, but also who knows how you're made, why you're made, what you're made for, that understands your spiritual life, that understands the connection between your relationship with God and your relationship with other people. At the end of the day, there's no way that your relationship with God doesn't necessarily affect your relationship with yourself and other people. And there's no way that your relationship with yourself and your and other people is not going to affect relationship with God. So yes, we can talk about the differences because somebody might only be trained in an expertise in one or the other, but that doesn't mean that they're actually entirely different fields.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks for the distinction. I know that you're an advocate of Catholic mindfulness in your treatments. Can you share with our viewers and listeners what that is?
I wrote a book called The Mindful Catholic, and essentially what I did was took a therapeutic intervention that's used in a lot of hospital systems. It's sort of very basic psychological theory. It's really nothing controversial within the field of psychology at all. It's actually incredibly robust and effective. It's got really great research that proves how effective it really is. And I took that protocol and I wanted to understand why it works from a Catholic perspective. Now, an interesting caveat here is that mindfulness as a protocol actually came from a Buddhist worldview.
Right.
You know, so that was an interesting thing. I thought, well, it can't work because it's Buddhist. Like, that doesn't make sense, but it works. So can we find a way that this works in a Catholic context and Catholic worldview? And as I went deeper into that question, I realized actually, this is exactly what Father Benedict taught us how to do with abandonment to divine providence. The difference is it's written in the words, the language, through the lens of psychological sciences. Instead of being a spiritual book, it's a psychological book. So I wanted to write a book that was actually both, that was an integration of the spiritual worldview, where we have a father who loves us, who we can trust and abandon ourselves to provide for us, and what that looks like psychologically, so that we can, it's almost like a psychological manual, how to have peace if you trust that God is a father who loves you. Because from the spiritual side only, it's like a lot of us will agree, most Catholics would believe, okay, God is good. God provides for us. We can trust him. That's the spiritual side. And then we go and we're anxious all day, or we get upset about silly things. So my question as a psychologist is always, how do I make this practical? How do I translate the spiritual ideas into lived experience so that you can not only believe that and talk about it on Sunday, but then feel like that Monday through Saturday in your regular life? And that's what Catholic mindfulness is.
But it's, I mean, if you can go a little deeper on it, it is an interior sort of peace, psychological balance, right? It's like, do you share techniques within your consultations as to how to achieve that through the spiritual component, like contemplative prayer, or how do you, I'm still confused as to what the differentiation between
what it is.
You shared how, what it does, but sure. How does it, where's the line from the Western approach that you describe with Buddha versus the Catholic approach and how Catholics reach spiritual peace, right? I mean, the idea is to, you know, find peace within your heart through God, right? Contemplative prayer or just stillness. And so the lines are blurred, if you could kind of just...
Sure. Yeah, the first step is to be able to calm the mind down, you know, to be able to find mental peace, not ultimate. We don't start off talking about ultimate eternal peace, but when we think about just the frantic mind, you know, just telling people to stop thinking anxious thoughts is not going to work. We have to understand the way the mind works and actually work with it, not against it. And at the end of the day, there's really no difference in the practical level of what the Eastern versus the Western or Catholic perspective is actually doing, because we're both talking about what the human person does. It's like, you know, if it's something physical, this makes sense. Like, what's the proper way to stretch before you go for a run? You know, does it matter if you're a Buddhist, a Hindu, an atheist, or a Catholic? Well, you're just talking about basic human things. This is how your muscles work. This is what you should do when you're going for a run. Okay. Well, the mind is part of our body. It overlaps with the body. We're talking about exercises to strengthen the way your mind works. And so I have exercises built in. By the way, this is on our website. If you go to the catholicpsych.com website, and then you can look up the virtual retreat. I do an 8-week Catholic mindfulness virtual retreat. And it's just a series of little videos, snippets, exercises to practice. It's essentially mental exercise. This is not prayer. We're not getting into prayer yet. We're not talking about the spiritual life. But it does prepare us for prayer. You know, so it's like if you're going to adoration, if you're going to mass, I know for me, if I go to mass and I don't prepare myself, my mind's racing all over the place. I don't hear a single word of the homily. I'm not entering into the readings. I'm not entering into the liturgy. You know, my wife's walking out with me after church. She's like, hey, what'd you think of that homily? I'm like, oh, wait, what was it about again? Like, I totally forgot.
Yeah.
Because I have a thing I'm working with here that's actually part of my responsibility. It's this mental thing between my ears. And if I don't prepare it correctly, I'm not actually entering into the spiritual experience. And no amount of prayer and good wishes is going to do the work of actually understanding the way this brain is working. So that's what Catholic mindfulness is. It's mindfulness through a Catholic lens. And as you go deeper into the understanding of why the mind works this way, what we're actually doing, and ultimately the purpose for why we should be practicing this, that's the Catholic part. Because Buddhists will say, get a hold of your mind so that you can ultimately realize that there is no real self. You know, and I don't know how deep you want to get into this, but the philosophy of that Eastern worldview is that the differences between you and me and us and the world and us even in God are all illusions. And so if we practice this kind of mindful awareness, ultimately we can learn the truth that differences and distinctions are illusions, and the only thing that's real is unity of all things. Now, okay, obviously we don't believe that. But actually when I talk about it, I say it's not that we think that that's false. The unity is actually true. And the diversity and distinctions between beings are true. So we actually don't think less than the Buddhists do. We think more than the Buddhists do. We think what the Buddhists believe is true in terms of unity. We just add to it. We have this complexity that we call a mystery. Of, you know, the three and one of the Trinity. We're made in God's image. There is a oneness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a unity in the human family. We are all one in a sense. We have a communion of saints that we're all made for.
Right.
And we should probably think a little bit more about how connected we actually are with each other. But at the same time, we don't lose our individuality. And that's the Catholic part that's really important. So mindfulness is not a path to enlightenment where you realize that individuality is an illusion. No, it's a path to having a deeper sense of understanding of who we are and how we're made, which is ultimately, as individuals, made in the image of God, called to communion with Him.
Yeah. I know this is a common sort of question that some Catholics have because they're confused. And I even went on your website and you released some blogs on this because you recognize the confusion or the lack of understanding.
For sure.
So it was good. So it's good. It's important. And really the oneness is the oneness of God, being united as one with God, which is what you showed the differential distinction, which was really great. Do you have any kind of, I know that when I introduced you, you talked about, you know, St. Francis of Assisi as a spiritual, mentor for you or a leader. Are there other saints that you looked up to or model yourself after or?
Oh gosh. So many, St. John Paul II is really our patron, our model. And, his philosophy of the human person, his missionary zeal, his understanding of how to be with people. He was unafraid to enter into the conversation with the secular world. You know, he was attributed with bringing down communism. You know, it's like he was on the world stage, unafraid of the world. So he's a great example and model and patron for us. So we pray to him all the time. I absolutely love Saint Therese of Lisieux. I think her little way is actually incredibly courageous. I want to say almost manly. People think like, oh, cute little flower. She's so sweet. Little French saccharine kind of thing. It's like, no, it takes incredible power, strength, and courage to actually let go as much as she did and really trust in God's mercy. And a lot of the Franciscan saints throughout the years. We've recently prayed a lot with Saint Charbel as a patron saint for our family.
So that's a new one for me. Don't know that one.
Yeah, he's got a beautiful letter that like an encouragement to families and to married couples.
Oh, beautiful.
And it's really practical. He was a Lebanese monk and he was, you think of this hermit living in a cave, basically. Like, what does he know? But then he, the way he wrote was so present and practical for family life. So those kinds of like human, integrated, not sort of lofty abstractions of holiness, but the people who really bring it down to earth, I get really excited about.
And plus St. John Paul, I think he was a philosopher too. I mean, his writings certainly show immense understanding of the human mind and the human psychology. I mean,
absolutely.
I'll spend a whole lifetime just trying to get through his writings, right? It's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. It's so complex. Yeah. And that's really our aim, what we're trying to do with our summit coming up, to bring together. I have Peter Kraft, who's a philosopher. He's really much better at being attainable and approachable. That's the idea of our summit is like, let's bring in these ideas, these lofty things. We have Father Columba, who's another CFR Franciscan, really, really lofty, beautiful spiritual ideas, but bring it to a place that is experiential and is accessible so that we can actually put things into practice that make sense and actually change things about our life according to the way God made us.
Amazing. We've had Peter Krafel on our show a couple of times here on our podcast. And
oh, sweet.
Jake and Heather Kim as well, who are going to be at the summit. So maybe you could share the date, the location, some details regarding the summit.
Sure. Yeah. We're going to be at Drew University right outside of Newark. And it's June 20th to 22nd. So coming up this summer, we have virtual tickets available as well. And so if you can't come in person, obviously we'd love to have you in person. It's a more integrated experience for the Summit of Integration. But we have Matt Marr, who's going to be doing an acoustic set, kind of a rare thing, I guess, for him to do an acoustic private concert just for the attendees at the conference. That will be live streamed as well as part of the virtual ticket. And we've got a room block set up at a local hotel. So you can go to catholicpsych.com/summit, and that's got all the information there. We have a theologian named Jennifer Morel. She is an expert on the theology of the body and male and female, gender issues, things like that, that are really beautiful the way she articulates her understanding of how God made us. And so, yeah, we're bringing all these pieces together to give people an experience of how faith really does matter in our life and can make our life better.
That's awesome. And I'm excited that AOH Music, our music division from Array of Hope, is invited to open up for Matt Maher. So
I just heard that. That's so exciting. That's going to be awesome.
We're very excited. You just said, so how, what is the one thing that you'd like every Catholic to know about the relationship between faith and mental health?
Oh boy. Well, the one thing is that we are made for love. We are seeking love. We long for love at the deepest level. We are formed in love, and we are also malformed with the imperfections of love. But the ultimate healing that's available to us, our greatest hope, is that we are loved. So we already have the thing that we're all longing for, and that maybe things go sideways along the way. But it's like the answer, the cure, the vaccine, the ultimate end is already given to us. It's not a question. We don't need to set up labs to do more research to make sure we get the antidote. It's already here. We already have it. So there's nothing that can be worse than our deepest longing for love. And that has already been solved for. That's our greatest hope.
That's awesome. And really, what is love? You know, God is love. So we're
God is love.
And he's embedded in our DNA. And I absolutely love, I don't think there's any other organization outside of what you guys do that a Catholic who wants to, let's say they're having difficulty within their family or even a child that wants to make sure, because psychologists are like, sometimes you go to a psychologist, you bring a kid to a psychologist, you have no idea what you're going to get and whether they're going to follow really what you've taught in your home, right? Regarding morals and spiritual beliefs. So it's reassuring for me as a parent, and I'm sure very reassuring for many parents, that there is an organization that, you know, takes that into consideration, not only shares it, but enforces it, which is really beautiful, Greg, that you set this whole thing up like this.
I appreciate that. And I do have to say there are some really amazing Catholic therapists and Catholic psychologists out there. It's not a big field,
yeah,
but it is definitely a growing one. And I think the more people realize that it's possible to do what we're doing, I've had so many young people, students, people considering graduate school tell me that they're inspired by what we're doing, and it's giving them the permission and the idea that it's actually okay to do this. We can be Catholic psychologists and therapists out there in the world. So I'm so grateful to have that sort of part of our platform to provide that sort of opportunity for people to even think and consider that this is possible, because it really is. And this is actually what we should be doing with this study.
Amen. So what's on the horizon for Catholic Psych? Where are you guys moving? What is it that you're excited about outside of the summit?
Yeah, I think all hands are on deck right now. That's a funny question to even think about. It's all about the summit right now. But we built a training model for helping people learn how to provide this kind of mentorship. So we have a certification program. It's called the CP MAP. It stands for the Model of Applied Personalism, which was John Paul II's philosophy. So probably after the summit, we'll be promoting that a little bit. I've got a book coming out in October called The Personalist Cure, which is all about the impact and influence of St. John Paul II on a proper orientation of psychology. And so probably for the next year, we're going to be really promoting that and looking at all these ways that we should be leading the conversation in psychology, because we really do know how God made us. We have the blueprint of the human person. And if we proclaim that, we can actually help people more than anybody else.
Amen. Amen. Well, Greg, it was a pleasure having you on. Best of luck during the summit. Obviously, we'll be there. Hopefully, I'll get to meet you and shake hands.
Yeah, can't wait to meet you in person.
In person. And I wish you all the best in your organization and all your work, and God bless you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. God bless you too.
Thanks for joining us here for this Reason for Hope podcast. In case you didn't know, we do a lot more than just produce podcasts here at Array of Hope. We have a variety of ways that we evangelize through our culture through high-quality media and events. Click on the link above or below in the description, which will direct you right to our website, where you can see the many ways that we're able to help you and your church community grow deeper in our Catholic faith. Until next time, peace.